Hey there, I'm Brian Kateman, host of the Reducitarian Podcast, where I speak to experts in their field about how to accomplish a concrete goal that advances our shared mission for a more sustainable, healthy, and compassionate world. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hey, Bruce. Hey, Suzanne. Thanks so much for being on the Reducitarian Podcast.
Hi, thanks.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for having us. We're very excited to be here.
Of course. I'm super happy you're here. I'm very excited to talk about website design. It is no secret that everyone needs a website. Everyone needs a brand. And you two are going to help make that happen for listeners today. So maybe you can just start by just give a, 60 seconds about who you guys are and, you know, why do you think websites or branding is important for any particular venture?
Sure. So I'll tackle the first part of that. So we work with a company called Enrich Creative, and we are branding and marketing tools for people that are focused on improving the world around them through healthy food, through lifestyle change, through community, all of those kind of good things. We essentially help people make a difference, and that's what fuels us. But we create everything from basic brands, not basic brands, but brands. We create marketing tools, we create websites, all of those kind of good things. So websites are one of the big things that everybody asks us for.
Nice.
So yeah. Bruce, Suzanne's, do you want to speak a little bit about why it's so...
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
go for it.
Director of marketing, I'm director of design at Enrich.
Nice. Excellent. Yes. Powerhouse team. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I'm imagining someone in the world has an idea for something, a company, a business, a service, a product, or so on, and they want to begin to formalize their branding, their communications. Let's say they're not at the place yet where they can hire an amazing website design branding firm like yours. What's the first place for them to get started? What should they first do?
Well, one of the first things that they're going to want to do is make sure that they've got a good name for their business. That's the absolute step one. Do not pass go. Start there. You've got to figure out what's important about your organization and how you can communicate that to the world through a name. So deciding on your business name, and then an extension of that is when you go to develop your website, which is the single best place for you to be able to talk to the outside world about your organization or your product or your service. You're going to want to extend that business name into your domain name or your URL. So that's the absolute first thing you're going to do as soon as you've decided, hey, I've got to start this business. Let's go.
And any, and
there's
any,
a couple of,
yeah, sorry. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say there's a couple of places where you can actually go to purchase that domain name. You can go to GoDaddy. That's one of the most popular. Google Domains is also a fantastic one. That's a little bit less known, but for sure, one of the strong ones. Then there's also things like Namecheap is another one. And you can actually, if you purchase a plan through Squarespace or Wix, which we'll talk about a little bit later, they often include a URL or a domain name for 1 year, complimentary included.
And I imagine, you know, that's a hard decision that someone has to make, coming up with their name and their identity. It's not totally the focus of this episode, but you have any tips for, you know, how to come up with some options for, names for a venture? Is that something you encounter with your clients? And if so, how do you help them?
Absolutely. We've got a lot of people that come to us and say, okay, I want to do this, but again, like you said, where do I start? So one of the first things that we'll do with them is sit down and do a brainstorm. We'll hear about all of the facets of their business that they want to put out there. And then taking all of those into consideration, brainstorm lists of names and then start siphoning down. Okay, this doesn't necessarily apply. That could be taken in a different context. This could be misconstrued, and start eliminating and narrowing down that way. So really siphoning down to these are the top couple of options. And then, you know, potentially even asking friends and coworkers or other people, what do you think? What are your thoughts about this?
Another thing we run into a lot is someone will have a good name, but you can't get the domain name or the URL for it. So, you know, a lot of times when we do these brainstorms, we were working with someone recently and we had a bunch of great names, but the .com for that name was taken. So, you know, we couldn't, it sort of took it off the list. So it's about finding something memorable, but also something that someone's going to be easy to find on the internet.
And you can try to purchase, right, the domain from someone else, but I imagine that can cost a lot of money and also doesn't necessarily, you know, work out all the time.
Sure.
Right. There's a lot of people that actually purchase large lots of very basic usernames or URLs, and then they just sit on them. Mm-hmm. And then they end up charging exorbitant amounts of money just to have that simplicity of a name.
We're in the wrong business. I think we would have been wealthy people if we hopped on that train.
I think you're right.
All right, so that makes sense. So once you've got your once you've got your name, you've got a domain name, what happens next?
Yeah, was in the next
one.
Go ahead.
It's okay. No, Bruce, go.
We're both so excited to share. I would say the next step is developing a simple logo for your business. And I think for this podcast, we're talking about some do-it-yourself options. So, you know, just things to consider are keep it simple. You know, you want it to be easy to recognize. You want, you know, if you have a name, you want it to be easy to read. So thinking about, you know, fonts that are recognizable and not something that's like super scripty and it's going to be hard for someone to know what your name is. So that's sort of the first things to consider once you have that name.
That's probably hard for someone to do on their own, right? I mean, maybe they can go out and like rely on Fiverr or there's some, right? Isn't there something, some contest site that creates logos as well?
There are, yeah, there's a couple. There's like 99 Designs and Fiverr. If you're starting out, I wouldn't recommend those, although you can get a lot of options for not a lot of cost. I think if you're, you know, I would rather just do it for free if you're going to do it yourself, you know? So there's, like if you do Squarespace, as a website platform, we mentioned they have a free domain. We're not sponsored by them in any way. We just think they're really easy to use. But they also have a logo maker where you type in the name of your business. You type in the kind of icon, say you want a tree or a turtle or a plant. And it sort of gives you a nice little icon, a simple, clean name, and it sort of generates a logo for you.
Really? I didn't know that. So this is through Squarespace. It'll do that for you. That's cool.
And there's other options. There's like Logo Maker and Canva, which is used for like people use for like social media posts. It offers a similar thing where you can sort of generate one on your own.
Got it. Cool. That makes sense. All right. And then you're sort of saying like stylistically, you want it to be clean, simple. What do you want like an image next to it? Or is that kind of like, I think of the Apple, you know, the Apple logo. You're a fan of that in addition to the word or?
Yeah. I mean, I think a simple icon like that really helps convey what you're doing. You know, I think the people we've seen that they do it themselves, the biggest mistake is really overcomplicating the logo from the start. So we've seen some with really crazy illustrations or they'll try to do like a photo in a circle or stuff that just doesn't translate very well.
You don't get the metaphor, Bruce. It represents our smallness in a vast world.
Right.
Not landing with you.
One metaphor, it's okay. But you know, we've seen one where there's like a tree and a butterfly, vegetables and someone running. You know, it's like we're trying to do too many things. So,
or especially the other thing is too, especially in this particular space with being people that focus on eating more plants and eating more of a plant-based lifestyle and things like that. Everybody wants a leaf. Everybody's got a leaf.
Uh-huh.
So, and that can be overdone. That can be very much overdone.
But pick a carrot careful. Or pick a, you know, pick a different vegetable.
Right. Exactly.
So finding a way to differentiate yourself was certainly part of that branding and logo design experience. Yeah, I found it helpful just to kind of brainstorm with friends and colleagues and just, you know, just generate a list of ideas and then ask people, you know, what excites them the most. And that tool that you mentioned is pretty cool. Why are you not a fan of Fiverr or 1099 Design? Just because you think you'll get equally good stuff for free, or you think you'll get better stuff using that? Just curious.
I think as a design professional, our bias against like 99 Designs is that you're theoretically getting, having 100 people do work for you, but you're only paying one of those 100. So it's more like an ethical thing. It's not that the quality isn't going to be great.
Oh, interesting.
It's more that it's a system that forces a lot of people to do work, but only one of those people get paid, which as designers, it's not something that we approve of or condone. If someone does work for you, you should pay them for the work. I think that's sort of our approach. So even if it's, you know, someone right out of college or someone, you know, just trying to, you know, get started, you know, pay them for their work if they're going to do a simple logo for you. You don't have to pay them a lot, but, they should get paid.
Every episode I learn, I'm committing some ethical faux pas. It is impossible to live in this world without feeling like a total piece of crap once in a while. So I appreciate that, Bruce. Okay.
But the designer, in their defense, the designers that work on their sites know they know what situation they're dropping themselves into. So,
no, I'm mostly playing, but that is a fair point on its economic model. But I do like that free tool that you mentioned with Squarespace. So to find that tool, you just Google Squarespace free logo generator or what?
Yeah, it's like Logo Maker. There's also another site called Logo Maker. Just look for like free logo generators.
Got it.
There's another site called the Noun Project, and it's a bunch of, you mentioned the little like Apple icon. It's just a website full of those kind of things. So you can search by topic or theme, and it'll show you like 100 different versions of a tree or a, you know, a plant or a fish or whatever you're looking for. Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay.
And they're all free.
Free is a good thing without the ethical baggage. So that's good.
Especially when you're starting out.
Right. That's the thing. It would be great to hire, a professional, but I think there's this first stage that someone goes through where you just want to put something decent together because you're just starting out. And then once you're at that next level, maybe you get to the next phase, which we can talk about at the end of this. So you got your name, you got your logo. When do you start thinking about colors? With the logo, that must be a relevant time, right?
Yeah, with the color. Yeah, with the as you're thinking about the logo, you know, you want to think about colors. And, you know, we'll often look at other businesses for inspiration. So if you're in, a restaurant space, what do the other restaurants look like that are, you know, offering a similar product to you? Or, just look at the competitors. So you want something that's going to stand out, but also not confuse people if they're looking for a certain kind of thing. And that's when you want to think about colors, think about fonts, think about, the general look for your brand.
I struggle with that the most because I have no sense of aesthetic or colors. I just have no clue. I mean, is there something out there that kind of will pair colors together? Because I don't know if, lime green and cerulean, I don't even know what color cerulean is. I don't know if I've heard it before. I don't know if they go together. Yeah, is anything out there that helps with that kind of palettes?
Yeah, there's a couple websites. I mean, we also use like Pinterest is a good resource. So if you just search mossy colors, it'll give you, some little palettes with like 5 or 6 shades of green and blue and purple. So that's a good resource. And it's free. And then there's sites. And I can't remember the exact URLs, but it's like color themes or something like that. I would just search for that kind of that term, like color themes. And there's a couple sites out there that are good. And some you can like upload a photo. Like I wanted to have this kind of palette and it'll give you a set of like 4 or 5 colors that sort of fit that that look.
Nice. I have this experience when I go to get dressed in the morning. Like I look at a tie and I go to Isabel, my wife. I'm just like, does this go together at all? I have no conception. So you may be solving more than one problem today in the world with this episode. All right. So you got your name, you got your logo, you have some sense of color that you might want to use. What's next?
Yeah. I think once you're there, I think the next step is you can start thinking about content for your site. And I think Suzanne can speak to that a little bit.
Right. I mean, that's actually where I end up working hand in hand with a lot of our clients. Because once they do have those basic elements decided, then the next thing to do is think about the information that you want to put out there in the world. You want to figure out what do you want other people to understand about that product or that service or that organization that you're launching, right? So the best thing to start with is really just coming up with, again, I'm a big fan of lists, but listing all of the type of information that you want to accomplish on that website. What do you want people to know? Most of the websites, well, not most of the websites, all of the websites are going to have a homepage of some sort. You're going to have some sort of a description about the personnel who are involved in the organization. So maybe a bio or a profile or how they met or something like that. And you're going to want it, at the simplest terms, going to want to have a description of the product or the service or what your organization is doing in the world. So those are the very key elements of any website. So you're going to want to fill in those buckets for sure. But then beyond that, start thinking about, okay, do I want to educate people with this website? Maybe I want to teach them a little bit about environmental concerns or about nutrition or about the impact they can make on the world. And then that would obviously get its own little section. So once you have all that content decided and you have your goals set, then it's a matter of deciding how is it going to be organized the best? What goes into what bucket, essentially? One thing you can even do is get some index cards and write concepts on there and then start aligning them in piles.
And when
that's
you
sometimes helpful.
And when you say content, we're specifically talking about like basically copy, right? Written words and sentences and so on.
Exactly. So then once you've got those buckets, as it were, identified, then you'll sit down and start actually writing those words and those sentences and those paragraphs that fill in that whole section.
And that can be hard in its own way, right? I mean, we're so attached to our own brands and visions and we have a lot of thoughts to share. It's very hard to be, because nothing is upsetting as going to a website, right? And you see just blocks and blocks and blocks of text. Are you encounter this?
That's actually one of the hardest things that we encounter is people are so close to it that they have a hard time seeing the forest from the trees. It's really hard to step back and say, okay, objectively, these are the nuts and bolts of what everybody needs to understand. And this is a little bit extra that I can take out. I can take this out, because at the heart of it, people really, unfortunately, don't read. They just don't. If you have a site or a page that's got too much copy on it and is not very directed and jumps out and lets people know those main points, they're going to go ahead and they're going to go to the next website. So right. I think one of the statistics was that our attention span at this point is shorter than a goldfish. It's kind of a little bit scary to think about, but
Wow. We better keep this podcast short. I think so.
Yeah. I think so.
You know, one piece of advice someone gave me back in the day, and this is actually, it was in response to media training. I was terrified to speak to a reporter. I was scared I'd forget what I had to say. And they said, come up with three words that basically will help trigger your memory and summarize what it is that you're doing. And for us, it's healthy, it's easy, it's good. I remember having those three words, and that actually translated well, to our first website, which, had some basic copy about that. So I don't know if that's useful to anyone, but just kind of boiling it down to the essential points and talking to people about it is probably a good way to go.
Well, and that's exactly it. For example, even looking at your website, you had a lot of information to say, so it was important to really boil that down and get to the heart of the matter and tell people what the most important parts were, so that they could just absorb that and then get it and then move on. So the easiest thing to do is really, yes, write all of the information down, but then start picking things out of it and maybe take a highlighter, highlight those important points. And those are the ones that really come forward in your website.
Smart. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you have this written text probably in a Word document or some document. What happens after that?
Well, as you're going through and you're paring it down a little bit, one of the things that it's very important to make sure that you're including is your what's called search engine optimization terms. So what are the words, what are the keywords that you know people are searching for? So you're going to want to make sure that that's included in your copy. So making a pass through to make sure that that's included is very important. The other thing that you're going to want to do is you're going to want to have calls to action. You need to tell whoever it is that's reading that copy what their next step is. So those need to be pulled into the copy as well. So once you've got all that content in there, then it's time to really start choosing your website platform and start building the website.
What are some example calls to action? I imagine like donate, join our newsletter, this kind of stuff, or what?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for an organization that's not for profit that they're soliciting donations, donate now, learn more, get in touch, get started, any of those kind of things.
Makes sense. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And all right. So, and then you have the copy, you've kind of workshopped it for SEO purposes. You've run it by people. I imagine you also want to run it by people who are in your target audience, right?
That's one of the really good things to do. And sometimes we'll do that at the copy stage, or sometimes we'll actually get it into the design before we'll do that. Because sometimes the design really does impact how that copy comes across. But at the end of the day, you're absolutely going to want people in your target audience to read through it, make sure it connects with them, and make sure they're getting the main points.
And at this stage, would you go through the process of selecting photos to pair with the copy, or not quite yet?
That's a little bit further down the line. Once you start putting everything into the very next step is choosing what website builder you're going to use. Mm. Where are you going to have this website? Is it going to be Squarespace? Is it going to be Wix? Is it going to be Shopify? And Bruce has got some great points on which one of those is the best and how to make selections between them.
All right, Bruce, where's our website going today?
Sure. I mean, I think it comes down to sort of what your business is. So, you know, we love Squarespace. We've mentioned it a couple of times. It's sort of the easiest to use out there. So there are these platforms where you can drop in copy. It designs the site for you. All you have to do is pick photos and pick, you know, write your text. There's similar options. There's like Wix and if you have a product that you're selling, something like Shopify is a very common one to use. WordPress comes up a lot. We don't really recommend it for people starting out because it just gets really hard to use unless you're doing like a blog. But if you just search, you know, website builder, there's a ton out there. But Squarespace, I think, is the easiest and it's pretty affordable for people that are just starting out. And it's a platform that can grow over time. So as your business grows, it has the flexibility to grow with it.
Are the basic trade-offs like the price of using the service like Squarespace or WordPress or Shopify, the how ready to go it is versus how customizable it is? I mean, there must be, I know you're not a fan necessarily of WordPress. to begin with, but some people build on WordPress. There must be a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think WordPress is very customizable. Our main concern with people that are starting out is that the platform itself is not really user-friendly for people who aren't very tech-savvy, from our experience. Some people dive in and really get it right away, but it takes a little bit of sort of technical know-how to get it up and running. Depending on what you need, you have to install plugins. It just takes a little more work. And it's the design part is harder to customize, but some of the features are easier. Whereas something like Squarespace or Wix, the design is easier to do, but it may not offer all the customization that, you know, WordPress would offer. But we use WordPress with some of our clients, but it's something that when we do WordPress sites, we work with a programmer who knows coding and can really build it from scratch and get something that's really comprehensive.
Got it.
Not that I'm completely against it. I wouldn't prefer it if I was starting out. I would find it. It would not be my first choice if I was doing a website by myself.
There are a lot of people that I talk to that are trying to build their website in WordPress. And they end up backing out of WordPress and then going with something like Squarespace because of that steep learning curve. That's something for sure that we like to point out to people.
But some people love it. That's all they, you know, there's designers that only build sites in WordPress, and that's fine. You know, it's just for a do-it-yourself approach, it wouldn't be my first choice.
Okay. Well, we won't title the episode you know, why to hate WordPress. But what about Wix? You know, what's
Wix is okay. It's Wix and Squarespace are very similar in the features they offer. The big difference is sort of the interface and how the site is designed. Squarespace puts a little more constraints on you, which I think for someone starting out is good because it sort of forces you to kind of make a nice site. You know, it's harder to make a bad site on Squarespace. Like, because if you choose a good, there's a tons of templates, and we haven't talked about that, but they have a whole set of templates based on the type of business. So if you're a restaurant, or you're a photographer, you're a nonprofit, they have templates sort of pre-built for you to sort of build your site on, which makes it really easy. Wix has a similar thing, but with Wix, it's easier to sort of go rogue and sort of make design decisions that you might not be the best decisions. And the people we see that sort of do it themselves in Wix, the sites are just a little wonkier. They're a little quirkier, which some things you're just a little weird about the sites because it kind of lets you do whatever you want, which is good in some cases. But if you're not super comfortable with that, then I would stick with Squarespace, and it sort of does it for you to some extent, and then you can customize within that.
Got it. All right. Well, let's take the population of people who you're politely alluding to are kind of in over their head and would be better off with kind of simplicity. They've decided they want to go with Squarespace. You've mentioned templates. What's that about, and how do you go about choosing a template?
Yeah. So when you start, it'll on Squarespace and Wix both, it'll ask you sort of some basic questions about, you know, what's your business and what field are you in? And they kind of sort of walk you through how to do it. But they're also organized by category. So I mentioned like photographers or artists, they'll be more image driven. So there's space for lots of photos to show your work. Sites for nonprofits are going to have space for copy and places to share your mission and updates about your business. Probably a blog built in so they can, you know, share news or articles. And then sites for restaurants are going to have features to, you know, showcase, you know, the food you're making. There's usually a menu built in. So that's kind of and then you can go from there. There's a range. If you're selling a product, there's sites, there's templates just for products to set up to show off, you know, something you're selling. And that would happen in Squarespace. Wix has a little bit of that. And then Shopify is just built for e-commerce and selling things online. And so their templates are really geared towards that. And it's built to make it really easy for people to buy things on your site.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. All right. So once you've kind of settled on a template, let's say, you know, you're a restaurant and you've chosen the restaurant template.
Yeah.
I think this is the next part that can be intimidating. It's like, you've chosen this template. You see that things are customizable. I don't know where to begin. I mean, where do you put the photos? Where do you put the text? What do you change that's there? And how do you come up with ideas to solve those questions?
Sure. I mean, so the templates are going to give you a starting point. So they're going to sort of show you where to put the photos. You've written that text we've talked about, so you kind of know what you want to say about your business and what you want to share with your audience. And it gives you spaces to do that. And from there, there's some features where you can add more photos, you can take photos away. But if you're starting with one of those templates, it kind of gives you a foundation to build from. And hopefully if you pick one that matches your business, the work is minimal, especially if you're starting out. And then you can, you know, that's when you can show it to people and, you know, get feedback on what's working and what's not. But also we didn't talk about photography. I mean, we talked about writing your content, but you're going to need some imagery for your site. You know, if you're a restaurant, you're going to want to photograph your food. So I wouldn't recommend stock photography in that case. You know, for any startup, I think if you can get good photos of what you're doing, if you're a nonprofit, you know, get people at events, you know, it's less common now in person, but you know, if you get people doing things that are related to your business, that's great.
Why do you not like stock photography? You don't like you don't like a lot of things, Bruce, is what I'm learning.
No. I was saying it's good. I wouldn't recommend stock photography for a restaurant because you don't want to. I just saw a food truck recently and it was covered in stock photos, and the person behind me, like, I don't think realized that. Oh, what's that? What's that? Well, that looks really good. And like right away, I know it because I've seen a lot of stock photos, because it wasn't the actual food they were serving.
I see.
But stock photos are great. We use them. We use them a lot for a lot of our clients. I think they're good for capturing bigger ideas. But if you can weave in any of your own photos into your site, it's great. It just makes it more personal. Gives people a real sense of what your business or organization's all about. But if you're not selling actual things, if you're, you know, we use stock photos on a lot of nonprofits. We use it on a lot of like lifestyle medicine sites where they're not going to show their patients, but you want to give the sense of someone being active. So people exercising, show people eating well, show people cooking, or just beautiful shots of healthy food. You know, well, those are times when we use stock photography. And
I get what you mean. Like I remember our first conference, you know, we didn't have any photos because it was our first event, but then we had a photographer come to that first event, and then our website was improved with more personalized photos that really demonstrate the experience. So I get what you're saying. So, I mean, if you do need some stock photography, where do you get that?
Sure. Yeah. So there's two big ones to pay. Like Shutterstock is one that we use a lot. And then iStock/Getty Images. Getty sort of has the market on most of them. And those are a little more expensive. But by expensive, they're still only, you know, $5 to $30 an image. So it's not too bad. Depends on the site and depends on the image. And then there's a couple of free ones. Like we use Pexels. It's PEXELS.com. And it's people that have shared photography. There's some really great food shots on there. More artsy direction. And those are completely free. I think you have to credit them, like Creative Commons. And then Raw Pixels, another good one that has a lot of free photography and a lot of public domain stuff that's free. So if you want, you know, old illustrations or paintings or, you know, the Audubon birds are all on there. If you want, you know, beautiful birds on your website, for instance, those are all free on Raw Pixel. Has a collection of old sort of illustrations and sort of old like stock engravings that you can pull for free if that's your vibe.
I'm sometimes scared to use free images. Do you think my intuition is just my, I don't know, Jewish New Yorker neuroticism coming through? I'm just always scared like I'll get sued or something. I guess what the platforms you're saying are sort of categorically permission granted to use. Or is there any advice you could give for someone who you know, gets occasionally nervous about that kind of stuff to ensure that they're able to use those photos?
Yeah, I mean, I would check the sites. You know, a lot of them have, some have attributions you have to give. I mean, I wouldn't just Google a photo and then pull it straight from Google. That's a free photo I wouldn't just take and steal and put on my site. But if you're pulling it from one of these other sites that have collected them, I it's completely safe. I wouldn't be afraid to use them.
All right, you saved me. Save me an appointment with my therapist. Sorry, so Suzanne, what were you going to say?
I was going to say with Shutterstock and iStock, when you do purchase, you do also purchase the license to use that photography or that image. So you're purchasing the license to use it. Now, if you're going to be running a TV commercial that 100 million people are going to see, then you can't use that image because that's a broader license that you'll have to purchase.
Right.
But a lot of these people do upload with the knowledge that their imagery will be used, and then they'll just get that credit like Bruce mentioned.
Makes sense. Okay. All right. And then once you have those photos, you have the text on the site. I imagine there's other things you need to add. Well, what kind of comes next?
Sure. I mean, as you're building your site, you know, you're going to want to add the things that, depending on what your business is. So if you're selling products, you'll need that e-commerce setup, which can be a little complicated depending on, you know, what you're selling and how many products. But a lot of these sites will sort of walk you through it because they're built to do that. And they want you to sell your products on their site. You know, you'll want something like a newsletter sign up to collect data from people that are coming to your site. So we mentioned those calls to action. You know, what do you want people to do when they get there? So if you want them to sign up for a newsletter, if you want them to make an appointment, you know, you'll want a calendar feature. If you just want them to contact you, you know, you have a contact form. those are all things that are pretty easy to add with any of these templates.
And there can be integration, right?
And then like social media, you know.
There can be integration, right? Like it'll collect the email address and it'll go into an Excel spreadsheet, or it'll go into a MailChimp, a newsletter platform or something like that, right? We can put all
exactly
the universe of the website together.
Exactly. Right.
And one of the main benefits of having an e-newsletter and using something like MailChimp or Emma or any of these Constant Contact, Squarespace even has a built-in function. But one of the main benefits is that those people that are coming to your website, you can then have a back and forth conversation with them. You can interact with them again. So it's not just a one-time visit. You've started that relationship with them where they'll now stay up to date on what your organization is doing or the products that you're launching.
So those emails you send out will bring them back to your site, hopefully. You know,
right.
And that relates to what you were saying, Bruce, I think, about social media, I imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, you can, you know, linking to your social media accounts, you know, we haven't talked about that in the bigger picture, but as you're building your site, you're going to also want to build social media pages on, you know, whatever platforms you're comfortable with. You know, Facebook, Twitter are you know, the biggest, or most common for engaging with other people, but there's LinkedIn, there's YouTube if you're doing videos, Pinterest if you're doing recipes, you might want to share Instagram. Yes. Thank you, Suzanne. Yeah. So you'll want to build a presence on those, but then you'll connect those to your sites. And you can also you'll see a lot of sites like feeds. So here are my latest Instagram posts or my latest Twitter posts, so that it pulls people in.
Got it. Okay. So once you have all those additions in the website, are you pretty much done? What's next?
Well, once you've got all of those things in there, then we go back to exactly what we were talking about earlier, which is sharing the site with other people for review. You want some eyes on that site to make sure that people understand and are led through the site in a way that makes sense. You don't want somebody going directly from your homepage to, you know, for example, a map to your office or something like that. You want them generally going from your homepage to learning more, to eventually maybe signing up for a service or purchasing a product or learning more, or joining that newsletter. So you want some people that are in your target audience really to be able to read through that site, to visit it, to experience it, and make sure that it has the effect that you intended to. So that's the absolute next step. Once you've got all the information in there and you're happy with it, get those outside eyes to come on there.
So then you get that feedback, you make any changes.
Right. And go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, that's the best feedback that you're going to get. And yes, absolutely. You don't necessarily have to make all of the changes that are suggested to you. If you're very passionate about something and you feel in your gut that that's the way to go, then you can keep an element of it, but make sure you're taking all those other comments into consideration.
It should be for the audience, not for yourself. I mean, I think that's exactly at the heart of it. It's, you know, who's the photo should appeal to who you're trying to appeal to. The copy should appeal to them, should be directed to them. So more about what their benefits are and not always what you're offering, but, you know, really appealing to the audience.
I think that is, again, that's just hard. It's just really hard to let go of, you know, your favorite color, your favorite photo, your favorite word. But I think you're right that showing it to people, not just people, but also people in your target audience is a very good thing to do. I did have one technical question. I mean, I get that Squarespace is pretty easy, but or Wix. If you're having trouble, though, I mean, if you're just a little confused why this font is this color, or if you're confused why you can't align a particular photo the way you want, are there resources online or videos or documents? Is there a community that you can kind of interact with? Because I would hate to have someone kind of stuck and then not know what to do next.
Sure. I mean, we run into that too, just as we're building sites in Squarespace, you know. We've been working on our own site and I'll, you know, throughout the process, it's, you know, how do I, you know, change the color of links on my website? You know, it's something that should be really simple and easy to do. And in Squarespace, it's It was there. I just didn't see it. So, you know, use Google. I use it. We use it all the time, you know, to answer some of those questions. And then you'll see a lot of times it'll bring you to forums where there are other people out there that have the same question as you. And there's usually a range of comments with answers. And that applies to all the platforms. There's usually help. And you can also, you can always reach out to the support team of the platform, but Google has given the answer almost all the time for us, you know, for what we're looking for. I think I've had to reach out once for something on Wix that just would not work. And I got a response, I think the next day. So
nice. And they were able to help?
They were. So even as professionals, we run into these technical issues. So starting out, I'm sure people are going to have some problems, but you know, stick with it and yeah.
Cool. All right. And then you launch, right? You press publish or play or go or whatever the button is that gets it rolling. You celebrate it, you share it. Anything we should know about that?
Well, it's really, and this is a process that we're actually planning right now, because as Bruce mentioned, we're in the process of redoing our own website. So you do want to plan for some sort of a launch to share that website out there with the greater public. That includes emails that are letting people know that, hey, this site is out there. The people that have signed up for your newsletter list, your MailChimp list, because assumably you've been collecting names as you've been talking to people, engaging their interest. So you want to send emails out to them, letting them know, hey, my new site's live. You want to definitely check it out. You also want to, as Bruce mentioned, get your social media set up and start posting. That's a great way to let people know about a website that's just launched. And as you're doing that, make sure that you're considering doing some paid promotion too. So you want to get as many eyes on this as possible to share that far and wide. So that's really the single best ways if you're starting out to think about launching your website, in addition to hitting that publish button, because that's kind of a key. That's a key thing in the whole step there.
Yes. Well, hopefully you can handle that technical challenge of clicking that button.
Yes.
You've gotten this far.
Hopefully.
Maybe we have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to give you a surprise bonus round. You know, you've seen a lot of websites, and I'm sure some of them delight you and some of them make you want to cry in agony. Is there a kind of top three mistakes, top three things you see? It can just be the first things that come to your mind. And then I will ask you the opposite of that question. You know, what are the things that you love? But if there's anything that comes to mind that just makes your head spin, I'd love to know.
Oh, I've got this one.
Nice.
The very first thing is way, way, way too much copy without any organization at all. It's people following exactly what's in their mind and literally translating it to what's on paper. That doesn't work. That really, really doesn't work. You have to have a purpose. You have to have some sort of organization to it. You can't just spew words and hope that some of them hit, because as I mentioned before, people don't read. They don't have the attention span. So you're dealing with limited time. So that's definitely, for me, that's number one.
Yeah,
Bruce, I'll let you have number two.
Sure. I mean, I think we mentioned consistency a little bit earlier. I think that's a big one. You know, we'll go to sites and we'll see, you know, stock photography in any of these photo sites, there's lots of styles. They can be dark, they can be bright, they can be shot from above. So a lot of times from a design mistake, we'll see a hodgepodge of photos that just don't look like they go together. And with that, you know, a hodgepodge of fonts. You know, with Wix, you can have unlimited fonts. You know, with Squarespace too, I think with any of these, it sort of lets you have flexibility. So just keep it simple, you know, pick one or two fonts, have a good sense of what your photography style is, and visually it'll all kind of like come together. Limited color palette. You know, we mentioned, you know, that, you know, having a set of colors that all look good together. Cause that's one of the things we see a lot where people that are kind of doing it themselves, where it's just, it looks like it's all over the place. You don't really know where to focus. You don't really know, you don't really get a sense of what the brand is or what they're about. So I would look out for that.
Cool. Anything else before we get on to the good stuff?
Ooh, let's see. So too much copy, the calls to action would be the next thing for me. Because there are a lot of times when we'll see a website and somebody will say to us, but I'm putting everything out there, but you're also not telling people what that next step is. You're not telling them what to do with the information you've just given them. So that would be another huge thing that we see. That's kind of like a moment.
All right. Excellent. That's three. Yeah. Anything that you just are blown away by? I mean, I guess it's the inverse of those three things, but is there anything you're just loving lately in website design that people should be thinking about, or the language that they're using, or things that you think are marketable or persuasive? Any tips there would be cool.
I think one of the biggest things that I love to see in a website is somebody that really is looking at it from their audience's or their customer's perspective and addressing those needs. They're speaking directly to the person that they're trying to reach. They've identified this is what their challenges are. This is what they hope to accomplish. And they're speaking directly to those points. So that's one of the best things that I've seen in websites. And that puts a big old smile on my face.
Nice. How about you, Bruce? Anything that's got you happy these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's when the brand gets played out from start to finish. So, you know, like when I come to a site and whether it's really clean and simple or funky and weird or colorful, you know, just seeing that throughout the whole site. So you get the same sense of the brand on the homepage. And, you know, on the services or the products sort of match that. And then the blog has the same tone in the writing. You know, if I've signed up for the newsletter, you know, I get that, you know, in my email box. So, you know, just really being, having a good sense of the brand and having that carry out, you know, visually throughout all the different pieces as a system, you know, I think really resonates with me. There's not really one new technical or you know, cool new thing, but I mean, I think, that's something that really gets me, you know, and also being interactive, you know, websites are interactive. They're not books. They're not, you know, just flyers where people are, you know, flipping pages. So having, you know, a good sense of people, they don't need to have fun on your site, but they need to, you know, it needs to be really easy to navigate through and find their way and be an experience that they enjoy and not something that they are like, oh, I went to the site, but I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do or how to buy this product or, you know, how to attend this conference or what even this person does, you know? So just keeping that in mind that it's an interactive thing that people, you know, sort of move through.
It speaks to the importance of some of what we talked about at the beginning, right? This good planning. I will tell you a weakness of mine is that I like to move a million miles an hour. When Suzanne said one of her favorite things are lists, I was like, I don't know how we've survived a friendship this long because that makes me very anxious lists. I just want to go really fast. And I have found that sometimes works, but inevitably you have to, if you're going to do that, you have to go back and kind of redo things. So, you know, having that really strong brand, the colors, the photos, is your copy, you know, playful? Is it grunge? Is it, you know, super clean and professional? I think these decisions, if you can clarify those as early as possible, that's going to help you, you know, as you're saying, both of you, throughout that process. But inevitably, and this is the last thing we'll talk about, there does reach a point where the common human can only go so far with their do-it-yourself website. And I don't know if this is an answer to this, but at what point does a person decide, you know what, my, you know, beginning website has had its time. It's time to hire a professional to do this for the next stage. And do you see a lot of clients who did have their initial first website and now have decided to spruce it up and upgrade?
Well, absolutely. As we've talked about, it's very possible to create an entry-level website and to work with it for a number of years before you start seeing that or start feeling like it's holding you back. Generally, there's a sense that there's so many things that I want to do, but I can't quite do it with my existing website. Or there's a lot of information that I want to get out there, but I don't feel like it's really connecting. So it's a gut feeling on the part of the person who's leaving the organization that the website is no longer serving them. Another key indicator would be that you've got people coming to you and saying, I just don't understand what it is that you're doing. What are you selling? You've got people that are pitching things to you that are completely unrelated to your business. Or even worse, that you just don't have people coming to you. You're not hearing anything. It's the crickets are pretty much deafening at that point in time. Those are three of the really big indicators that you need to do something.
Money's got to be one, right? Like, you have no money to put into your business. You just got, you know, 30 clients this year, your first $1 million investment, you've sold 10,000 products. You look at your bank account, you know, you're doing well. I imagine that's also a time where you start thinking about how to allocate more resources toward sprucing up, right?
For sure. If you realize that you're taking your organization or your business to a new level and you have that opportunity, then that's absolutely the time to step back and pay attention to not only your website, but your marketing in general.
Right.
How are you putting yourself out there? What are the channels that you're using? Are they effective? Is there a better way to do things?
Nice.
I think with the starter websites, you know, if you're, you know, a small business entrepreneur or a small nonprofit, you might do it yourself and sort of do it, you know, bootstrap and figure it out. But I think as those businesses or organizations grow, you're not going to have time to do that if it's successful, right? So like you said, there could be money and you have other jobs to do and you might have new features you want. And it reaches a point where the professionals can come in and really help refine the brand, make sure you're communicating right, and then help build out some of these other things that you may need, you know, whether it's a website, whether it's a new logo, whether it's, you know, more materials to promote your business. A professional firm would help, you know, keep that consistent and help convey that so that you're reaching the most people for the best cost, but also for the most impact.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, yeah. We've covered the basics, the very basics of branding and website design. I really appreciate both of you, Bruce and Suzanne, being on the Reducitarian podcast. And I hope we will have inspired people together to go out and go launch their venture and create some really great brands and websites along the way.
Absolutely. Yep. And we look forward to seeing them as we navigate around the space.
Nice, nice. Excellent. Well, thanks everyone for listening. And we will see you next time on the Reducitarian podcast.
Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.